Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF officials threaten to kill MDCT supporters in Mashingo province.
It's time for you to repent or you will see hell.
Zimbabwe's Speaker of Parliament is set to bring back home some women currently stuck in Kuwait.
We agreed that 32 young women be repatriated back to Zimbabwe.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe says targeted sanctions are not hurting Zimbabwe.
Let me be clear. Zimbabwe is not eligible for loans from international financial institutions because, as you know, it stopped paying before 1999.
And former Education Minister David Coltart launches his book on Zimbabwe's political struggles.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The ZANU-PF leadership in Gudu, Masvingo province, has threatened to punish supporters of the MDCT who recently attended a rally addressed by their party leader, Morgan Tsvangirai. Our correspondent, Gandri Maramba, reports.
The threats were made at a meeting called by the ZANU-PF leadership in Gudu South and Chief Makore, who were eyed by local people that attended Tsvangirai's rally, where he urged his supporters to resist food politicization. Addressing spooked villagers at Chaitemura in Ward 27, several ZANU-PF officials threatened to kill some of the villagers who attended the Tsvangirai meeting, saying it was illegal in the area to attend opposition events. ZANU-PF District War Collaborators Chairman Joseph Msasiwa, who is popularly known as Comrade Fodo, threatened to punish the villagers with death and had a list of names of villagers that attended Tsvangirai's rally.
I don't want to waste your time. There are people who attended that rally without being allowed to do so by their village heads. I heard those who went to that men's rally, and I want to tell you that I will go their doors and paint them with blood. And if you see that blood, it's the end of you. Don't cry foul and accuse others of selling you out. You went to that rally in broad daylight and you were seen.
Fodo threatened to take immediate action against the villagers.
It's time for you to repent or you will see hell.
ZANU-PF chairman of the same district, Rabson Manzunzu, also threatened to shoot some of the villagers who attended Tsvangirai's rally.
Government does not buy bullets so that we shoot trees. I will shoot people, not trees. They is this lady, chief of Makovere. She is in village head's wife. I caught her inciting people to go home and leave this meeting. I will start with her. I will shoot her. All village heads who attended the opposition meetings will be relieved of their duties and replaced by loyal party youths.
Chief Makore, whose real name is Justius Muzenda, openly declared that he was a member of the ruling ZANU-PF party and banned opposition party meetings and rallies in his area.
I called you to this meeting. I heard people saying this meeting is ZANU-PF but was called by chief. How can this not be a ZANU-PF meeting when all traditional leaders belong to the ruling party? We are all ZANU-PF and even my village heads.
The chief further threatened to forcibly remove councillors, including Ward 27 representative Jeff Tatangemare, accused of inviting Tsvangirai to Gudu South. He also accused Tsvangirai of convening the rally against a one-month public holiday in his area, declared to mourn the chief's late father who died last month. But Tsvangirai scoffed at the threats, saying the chief does not have power to fire him.
If the chief, have got any power of firing me from my position, which I was voted by the people, So he can do so. But to my right, the people who voted me are going to say...
Some villagers say violence is resurfacing in the province ahead of the 2018 general elections. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mashingo, this is Gandhi Maramba.
Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda says he has negotiated for the repatriation of 32 women and girls who were trafficked to Kuwait under the guise of finding greener pastures but were later abused by locals. In an exclusive interview with Studio 7, Mudenda said that he is set to return home with the women on Friday. Hundreds of Zimbabwean women and girls were trafficked to Kuwait, where they were turned into sex slaves while others performed menial jobs. A couple of agents representing companies that recruited them have already appeared in court facing charges of human trafficking. Mudenda tells us more on his visit to Kuwait with a parliamentary delegation.
Yes, we discussed the issue extensively, although it was not the major issue of our visit. It's a matter that arose after my delegation had been briefed by our ambassador here in Kuwait, and the narrative was very sad indeed, because it actually verges on criminality by characters in Zimbabwe and here in Kuwait, who actually conned these young women with the promise of some attractive employment, only to be turned into some form of slavery with some elements of abuse. And I'm happy to say that after our discussion with the acting prime minister, who is also minister of foreign affairs, we agreed that the 32 young women be repatriated back to Zimbabwe. And we are making necessary arrangements.
So is this going to be at the government's expense?
We have made some contact with well-wishers here in Kuwait and at home. I'm happy that we have put together the resources to pay their one-way ticket back to Zimbabwe.
That was the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mudenda, speaking with Studio 7 from Kuwait.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Harry Thomas Jr. says Washington is ready to engage Harare and has dismissed claims that his country's sanctions regime have hurt Zimbabwe's economy. In this first edition of a two-part report, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reports on sanctions and new lines of credit for Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's debt distress remains the major hurdle for achieving its development objectives. As a first step toward normalizing relations with creditors, Zimbabwean authorities have developed a strategy for clearing arrears owed to international finance institutions. The plan received strong support from creditors and development partners at a meeting on the sidelines of the 2015 annual meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank in Lima, Peru. But Shidomu Nyati, an independent public affairs consultant, says it is not likely that the arrears clearance plan will succeed without the complete support of the U.S. because of the restrictive provisions under the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, or ZIDERA. Unlike the Staff Monitored Program, or SMP, which is approved by the IMF's management, a fund financial arrangement, new loans or budgetary support requires the approval of the IMF Executive Board. The U.S. effectively has veto power on the IMF Executive Board to approve or deny fund financial arrangements. The U.S. has similar controlling power in the World Bank. Asked about this, Ambassador Thomas says it is still premature to talk about the action the U.S. will take.
Let me be clear. Zimbabwe is not eligible for loans from international financial institutions because, as you know, they stopped paying before 1999, and that made Zimbabwe ineligible. That has nothing to do with ZIDERA. We do encourage economic reform. We would like to see economic reform. We're very encouraged by meetings in Lima. We'll have to see what happens in May. But there's a long way to go before there would be any discussion of monies and disbursement. So it's premature to talk at this point about new lending.
The Sunday Mail newspaper recently accused the United States of crippling Harare's economy by targeting banks dealing with Zimbabwe. But Ambassador Thomas says what has hurt Zimbabwe's economy more is its failure to reform and deal with corruption and not sanctions.
Our sanctions are on 98 individuals, 68 companies. If that one of those listed companies or individuals are trying to enact transitions, that is when the DERA takes place. I think the challenge Zimbabwe has as a dollar economy is that you have to perform as a dollar economy. That means the highest standards. That means lack of corruption. That means open transparency. But in no way are we trying to effect regime change.
In February 1962, President John F. Kennedy proclaimed an embargo on trade between the United States and Cuba in response to certain actions taken by the Cuban government and directed the Departments of Commerce and the Treasury to implement the embargo, which remains in place today. But on April 11, 2015, Presidents Barack Obama and Raul Castro shook hands at the Summit of the Americas in Panama, marking the first meeting between a U.S. and Cuban head of state since the two countries severed ties in 1961. The meeting came 4 months after the presidents announced that their countries would restore diplomatic relations and gave rise to President Obama's March 2016 visit to Cuba, the first by a sitting president in over 85 years. But the question is, why not Zimbabwe? International Crisis Group Southern Africa Project Director Pius Pigu says it's like comparing apples and oranges.
I think the big question, though, is that each case is considered on its own merits, and it may well be that the decision in the case of Cuba is that at this stage, moving towards the lifting of those measures is seen as positive, that adequate and certain steps have been taken. Perhaps in connection with Zimbabwe, they don't see those same steps being made and they're still concerned about some of those issues.
ZANU-PF chairman for the UK province, Nick Mangwana, says Mr. Mugabe is targeted because he's a pan-Africanist.
It is because of the position that President Mugabe takes on the international stage. He fights against the overwhelming force of America and its hegemony.
The United States implemented the targeted sanctions program in 2003 as a result of what it alleges to be actions and policies of certain members of the government of Zimbabwe and other persons undermining democratic institutions and processes in Zimbabwe. But Harare says sanctions were imposed because it embarked on a land reform program to address the colonial imbalances. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Blessing. We'll give you a second edition of this report tomorrow, in which we are continuing with the debate on the impact of sanctions on Zimbabwe and the way forward. Don't miss it right here on Studio 7.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa says government is concerned that Zimbabwe is becoming a dumping ground for various products sourced from several nations, a situation that has resulted in the crippling of local industries. Our correspondent Taura Ishawa reports from the country's second largest city, Bulawayo, in this report presented by VOA's Ndimiyake Mwakalyele.
Presenting the keynote address at the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair's International Business Conference in Bulawayo today, Mnangagwa acknowledged that the country has become dependent on imports from various countries, with local industries failing to produce for export due to viability problems. Zimbabwe is spending millions of dollars every month on imports, which in most cases are cheaper than locally manufactured products. The vice president said government is taking measures to stop this trend, but also challenged local industries to be innovative in order to be able to produce goods that are competitive.
Efforts are underway to arrest the trend and revive domestic industry. There is need for a paradigm shift by industry and business towards the use of abundant domestic resources and skills to provide goods and services of competitive quality. This will, in turn, undoubtedly endear Zimbabweans to locally produced goods and make them competitive on the international market.
Mnangagwa said government supports industries in drive to retool and noted that the globalization of the world economy requires that industry and commerce adopt new ways of doing business.
In the face of the regional trade integration agenda and the globalization, I call upon industry and commerce to rapidly adopt and adapt to cutting-edge innovation solutions in order to withstand competition.
Director Eve Gadzikwa of the Standards Association of Zimbabwe said government has to lead in efforts to come up with a national brand or image of the country which can help make it a destination for investment. Industry Minister Mike Bima, who was among several cabinet ministers at the meeting, said government has set up a committee for national branding.
You want to attract FDI, you want to attract investments. There is an image, something that you'd want to say, this is Zimbabwe. So investment promotion, they are involved. And you have tourism. So there's the Ministry of Tourism very much involved in the steering of national branding. Then also my ministry.
The International Business Conference has become part of the ZITF and brings together government officials and local, regional, as well as international leaders of commerce and industry to discuss investment opportunities in the country. This year's event is the 10th edition of the conference since its inauguration. This is Dimyake Mwakalyelye reporting from Washington on behalf of our reporter in Bulawayo, Taurai Shaba.
Coming up,
politicization of drought relief aid continues in Zimbabwe.
And we also give you our diaspora slot, so please stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
After months of campaigning in the U.S. presidential race, the Republican frontrunner Donald Trump and Democratic leader Hillary Clinton are close to squaring off against each other in the November national election after a string of convincing wins yesterday in the party nominating contest.
Nearly 6 months after the Paris attacks, top surviving suspect Salah Abdeslam appeared at a courthouse in the French capital just hours after his extradition from Belgium.
And press freedom declined in Africa and around the world in 2015, according to a new report by the monitoring and advocacy group Freedom House. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Zimbabweans in the diaspora continue to raise the country's flag high through achieving many goals in their respective fields. One such Zimbabwean is Washington, D.C.-based Varikai Mawema, who was recently nominated by the Washington Business Journal to be among 40 under 40 business leaders in Washington. Mawema is an architect at Gensler, a design and architecture firm where he has worked for the past 8 years. The former rugby player and referee is also a member of the Honey Band, a music outfit at Tacoma Park in the USA.
He is also a member of a non-governmental organization, Junior Achievement, which teaches young adults about financial literacy. Mawema, who has been in the diaspora for 19 years, speaks with reporter Jonga Kandemiri about this and related issues.
I would describe myself professionally as a designer and an architect who is mostly concerned with the power and the value that design thinking can bring to problem solving throughout the world. Mostly focused at this point in my community here in Washington, D.C., but also involved in projects and other initiatives around the globe. On the personal front, I'm a 36-year-old man, about to be 37. I am a husband and a father of two children. And I've been in Washington, D.C. 8 years and been involved in some some projects of significance. Some that come to mind include the recent renovation of the American football stadium of the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia here in the United States, and also being recently involved on our Washington, D.C.'s bid for the hosting of the 2024 Olympics, which involved a variety of venues. Although we didn't really win the competition to be the American city to host that, we did place second behind Boston.
Many Zimbabweans in the diaspora find themselves engaging in other activities besides their normal line of work. Do you have anything outside your job that you are doing?
If you're speaking about, for example, philanthropic efforts, I am involved as a volunteer in a number of organizations, but I'll mention one in particular by the name of Junior Achievement, which is a global not-for-profit institution which concentrates on teaching young adults and teenagers about financial literacy, workforce readiness, and entrepreneurship. And I have been involved with that organization since I arrived in Washington, D.C., and I've also designed a couple of facilities for that organization here in town. The Junior Achievement is also present in Zimbabwe, which is great news, and in many countries all over the world. On the personal side of things, I'm a musician. Perhaps it's fair to say that lately I've taken a step back from doing music just because I have a young family. But I'm in a band called the Honey Guns, a local band, and I perform as an individual solo artist. And I have a couple of records that I've put out over the last few years as well.
Do you have any plans of going back to Zimbabwe?
I would love more than anything to move back to Zimbabwe, or to at least be more regular in my visitation to Zimbabwe in the short term. The situation there professionally is a little bit more challenging than it is here for folks like me in my industry, and also especially given the network and the exposure and the opportunities that are here for both myself and my family and colleagues. But I'm hopeful that as things start to change in Zimbabwe, as they seem to have been doing, the environment is going to become a little bit more appealing for people like myself and others all over the world who are very anxious and very excited to be a part of Zimbabwe's future, you know, as we move into the next generation of leaders in the country.
That was Zimbabwean Vakirai Mawema speaking with Studio 7's John Gaka and Zemiri in Washington. A top human rights lawyer and opposition politician, David Coulthard, has implored the United States government to lift targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe, saying they have outlived their purpose. Coulthard made the plea yesterday at the book signing ceremony for his book entitled The Struggle Continues, 50 Years of Tyranny, at the U.S. Capitol.
Coulthard said the targeted sanctions imposed on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle a couple of years ago were not benefiting anyone but the ZANU-PF leadership because they were apportioning their failure to effectively run the economy on the restrictive measures.
It's a shame that the administration has not listened to many of us in the human rights community and in the opposition and simply lifted sanctions, not as a reward, but simply as a realization that they no longer are serving any purpose.
Coulthard, a former education minister in Zimbabwe's inclusive government, which ended in 2013, said although in the past the security chiefs were united around President Mugabe, they are now divided.
Not only is ZANU-PF split into three distinct factions, but the army, the police, the intelligence service is split as well.
Chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Ed Royce, told the gathering that Coulthard's book will enable the Zimbabwe situation to continue under the spotlight.
The cases and the human rights situations that bring to the attention of the world what is in danger of falling off of the front pages, because we've become so paralyzed by the incredible lack of human rights and freedoms in Zimbabwe, there is a danger of people forgetting about the human beings on the ground.
The struggle continues. 50 years of tyranny has already caused tremors in Zimbabwe after Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa denied that he had urged the killing of people during the Gugurahundi massacres of the 1980s, as written in the book. During a question and answer session, U.S. Congressman Gregory Simpkins asked Coulthard how it felt to be referred to as an African when he is white. Coulthard said although there were some white people who still regarded themselves as Europeans in Zimbabwe, the dynamics have changed because he has his roots dating back more than a century in Africa. Coulthard has held several signing ceremonies in the U.S. during the past few weeks and was expected to leave for Zimbabwe today.
Thank you there, Chris. We now go to the youth.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage. Today we have a dynamic young man, and his name is McDonald Munyoro. And he's going to talk to us about the 2016 Dialogue Exchange Program. Hello, McDonald.
Thank you so much for having us and for also creating a platform that is driving the inclusion of young people.
What is happening at the Dialogue Exchange Program this week?
All right, so what we have happening this week from the 26th to the 29th of April as a tool to promote youth participation in national processes, and as part of this DEP, we are going to have tech innovators, young people that are interfacing with digital media coming from the African continent, whether Burundi, Somalia, Kenya, Uganda, Zambia, among others, and also our local delegates that will be coming from the Zimbabwean. I think with young people looking at issues of national processes, generally the trend is that there's been a lot of apathy. Young people have been frustrated and they've lost hope in such processes. But the fascinating thing now with the digital media is that young people, instead of maybe going to a rally and meeting a politician through digital media, they are now even able to have dialogue and exchange ideas around issues that are of a national concern, but using digital media and even interfacing with some of these key figures in government or in some of the political parties.
Who's going to be there?
We're going to have government line ministries and departments. For example, the Minister of Youth is going to be there. We're also even going to have the Zimbabwe Election Commission. Then in terms of digital media, we are also going to be having Mozinda Hub, which is one of the local hubs that is driving innovation and also creating a space for young people to incubate ideas. We're also going to be having TechZim. And I think for this one, it's the biggest, I think, excitement that we have so far, which is going to be the presence of Sir Nigel as part of the DEP. For those of us that are part of the Twitter community in Zimbabwe, the single most person with a huge following when it comes to Zimbabwe on Twitter.
Last question, as we are about to close, what would you like to tell the youth concerning the power of social media?
Young people should be engaged in social media because it is the in thing for us as young people. Here we're talking of a platform that has got no time zone, as wide and as big as is the Twitter community. And I think for us as young people, it creates and offers an interesting opportunity to share, to learn, to engage, and to also connect with other people in other parts of the world, with other development processes across the world, and also show our solidarity and support to some of the actions that other people are doing in their respective countries.
That was Donald Munyoro, Cluster Coordinator for National Association of Youth Organizations, NAYO Africa. And I am Chione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage.
Thanks, Chione. So remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners and experts about the politicization of food aid in Zimbabwe. And now a quick recap of today's top stories.
ZANU-PF officials threaten to kill MDCT supporters in Mashingo province.
Zimbabwe's Speaker of Parliament is set to bring back home some women currently stuck in Kuwait.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe says targeted sanctions are not hurting Zimbabwean people.
And former Education Minister David Coulthard launches his book on Zimbabwe's political struggles here in the U.S.
That's our broadcast this evening.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Mtunga Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.